A lot of you are in love with the picture of marriage, the picture of relationships. But then we introduce a word like duty. That word doesn't even sound, that's like the most unromantic sounding word. And it's the one Paul uses. He said, it's a duty sometimes. And we got all these people going into marriages based out of desire and not knowing about the duty. Like, if you're going to get married, you better be ready to go to work some days. Not just go to work. You're going to go to work and do a job. Then you're going to come home and do another job, because it takes work to make this thing work. My marriage isn't working because you're not. If you went to your job like you came home, you wouldn't have a job. But somebody needs to say this. Somebody needs to tell you. It is sometimes where you come home and you have to do a drive-by before you pull in your driveway and just do a couple laps before you can go inside and face what's going on inside, because sometimes it's not pretty like a picture. Sometimes it's challenging. Yeah, sometimes it's difficult to go through different seasons, and you change and they change, and maybe they change in a way that you don't change, and you got to accommodate each other. And where are you now? And I got to overlook a fence. Now I know what you look like when you first wake up, and you know what I look like at the end of a hard day. And we're not fooling each other anymore, because we had a whole lot of pre-memorized, pre-programmed stuff that we did for each other during dating, and all that crap's out the window now because it just got real. And without a sense of commitment, if you come in here to this marriage thing, this relationship thing, this life thing, with what can I get out of it, you've missed the point, Paul says. He says, come to it, whether it's sexually, emotionally, relationally, come to it, not for what you can get, but what you can give. You are giving yourself away. And I think a whole lot of us want the gift of a relationship without the giving of ourselves in a relationship. I think a whole lot of us are messed up about this. Marriage is the best thing, but it's not the easiest thing. And if you go in knowing that, you'll probably have a blessed marriage. If you don't, here's what'll happen. You'll go in with expectations of romance, and then you'll meet a friend called reality. Romance and reality don't always get along. And then romance and reality, they get together and they have a baby, and the baby is called romance, reality. Then it's probably going to be resentment, which is going to create rebellion. If you go into it looking for what you can get. Now, I'm not just talking about marriage anymore either. This is why some of you don't have any deep relationships in your life. Because you go into relationships so needy, you're a taker, not a giver. And Paul says, you got to get past this. A mature view of marriage, a mature view of relationship, a mature view of Christian living, being a follower of Christ, looks like this. Look, verse 5. He says, don't deprive each other. Don't deprive each other. See, because when you go into relationships led by desire and you end up disappointed, the next step is deprivation. Now, because you didn't give me what I expected, I'm going to withhold from you what you need. And it happens in marriages all the time. The passion needs parameters if it is to serve the correct purpose. And what's gotten a lot of us in trouble in our lives is we had a good passion, but no parameters. So rather than building purpose, it destroyed purpose. And that's what happened to Moses. He had the right passion, but he put it in the wrong place and acted on it in the wrong way. Right passion, wrong expression. Look, bring me my sermon illustration. So like, I was just thinking of a way that I could show you this, a simple way to show you this. And it's like, imagine right now that at this point in my sermon, I know this is simple, just go with me. I'm like, hey, I got an idea. Let's build a fire on the stage. I just think it'd be cool to build a fire on the stage. I'm stacking wood to build a fire on the stage. I actually thought about how far should I take this sermon illustration. And I thought about gasoline, and I thought I would see how far I could go before people started leaving, exiting the building. But I think it suffice it just to say that, you know, everybody in the room understands the problem with this proposition. And the problem isn't building a fire. The problem is building a fire in a place where there's nothing to contain the fire. It's fine if you want to build a fire. But building a fire without any parameters would be to unleash. See, the same substance that warms your home when it's in a fireplace is the same substance that burns a forest in Colorado in the summer. The difference is whether it's contained. And when you release passions that were intended for marriage outside of marriage, you're building a fire with nothing to contain it. And God says the fire is a good thing. Fire purifies. Fire brings warmth. Fire is a source of life. There's nothing wrong with fire. But if you build the fire in the wrong place, if you put the passion in the wrong place, it will burn your home to the ground. It's a misplaced passion. It's a good thing in a bad place. And I wonder how many of you would have avoided some serious pain in your life if somebody would have showed you before you build a fire, you need somewhere to put it. And the only human relationship that can sustain this force of passion is a covenant relationship called marriage. And if you go building fires in other relationships that aren't built to contain the power of passion, it's gonna spread to places you don't intend for it to spread. And it's gonna destroy things that God gave you as a gift. And so Paul is not saying put the fire out. He's saying find the right place to build the fire. Make sure you have the right place for the passion. Or you'll get burned. And I'm seeing so many people and so many families get burned because they were trying to get warm. Because it's cold out there, and because I need relationship, and because I need somebody. So I think I'll stand up next to this fire. I did a word study this week. I studied the word intimacy, which is what we're all truly longing for. That's really what we all want. That's what all of our sexual expression, emotional expression is about. We want intimacy. That's what we want. That's what we desire from God and from others. We want to be known. We want to be accepted. We want intimacy. But then I studied the word infatuation, and I was fascinated to find out that in Latin, this will make you sound so smart at lunch this week. In Latin, infatuation literally means false fire. Looks like fire, but really can't warm you. Looks like fire, but really can't empower you. Looks like fire, and that's what the world offers, is an infatuation with images of sexuality, but it won't really warm you. In fact, it can actually run away from you and burn your house down. And some preacher needs to get up in front of you and just have the guts to care 2 cents worth of nothing what you think about it and say, if you're building these fires in the wrong place, it's gonna burn you. It's gonna burn you. So it's mismanaged passions. Passion is pure. The enemy wants to pervert it and use what God wanted to use to develop intimacy in your life to destroy your capacity for intimacy. When you start in a relationship with a person, especially a romantic relationship, you celebrate everything about them. And you celebrate everything about them that's different than you, and it's attractive. That's where the saying came from, opposites attract. But how many know that in marriage, sometimes the same opposites that attract, then the opposites start to attack? Amen. Amen. Because what you celebrated in one stage ends up being the very thing that frustrates you in the lifelong stage. Oh, he's just so funny. I just like him because he's funny. He's just like hilarious. He's always funny, and he's in there. He's 3 years in. Why can't you ever be serious about anything? Celebration. Frustration. The whole wedding ceremony is a celebration. You force your friends to buy all the same colored clothes and come support you and stand around you. There's a big celebration, and people go along with it, and they do it. They come out for you, and they do the whole thing, and people get up and say nice things and all of this. But celebration, I should have put a different stage in there. This isn't exactly true. It goes not just celebration to frustration. It goes celebration, then for a little while, it's toleration. But if you tolerate what God has called you to celebrate, it will eventually frustrate the relationship. Let me teach you something. I didn't make this up, but it's good. I don't even know who made it up, but it's still good. It's called the 80-20 rule. Have you ever heard about the 80-20 rule? 80-20 rule goes like this. In a relationship, nobody is going to give you 100% of what you want. Nobody. So a good relationship, let's say they give you 80. 80-20 rule goes like this. People have a proclivity to leave the 80 that they love to try to get the 20 that they want. This is why a lot of people leave churches, incidentally. You love 80% of what's going on, but there's a 20 in every church. Shoot, man, our church, we might even have a 30 or a 40 that you won't like if you stay around long enough. I don't know. I don't know the exact percentage. Let's just call it 20. Let's just call it 20. I mean, obviously, there's at least 20% that you don't like. And people will leave a church to get the 20 that they didn't have and leave the 80 that they loved. We just love how people are getting saved here and baptized here, and our family is connected, and our kids are in country, and our group is great, and it's a different city. We can serve and make a difference in the city. We love and go all these organizations. But you know, one time it was just think, wait a minute, one time? You're leaving because one time? You show up every week and get the word, but one time? Here's the dangerous thing. Before you leave 80 for 20 in any relationship, you better make sure that 20 is really worth it. Because you might find out that 20 is all it was. Here's the thing. She comes up to you in the office and she's got that 20 that your wife no longer has because your wife has had some kids now. But you might find out that 20 is the only 20 she's got, and your wife was a really good 80 and you, oh God, I'm preaching. You left 80 for 20. Now you're stuck with 20. You better be careful. You better be careful. Because I promise you, even if they got an 80, they got a 22. Touch somebody, say, you got a 20. And sometimes you don't discover the 20 that you don't like until you get in the relationship, but by then it's too late because you left the 80 for the 20. And some of y'all have been running from relationship to relationship, from church to church, and what you used to celebrate begins to frustrate you because you get used to it, and you see them in all kinds of different ways, and now all of a sudden I'm more frustrated about the 20 that you're not given than the 80 that you are, and it's a trap. I am called to encourage your strengths. We need to point this out because, as we've been saying, our tendency is to feel that I am called to fix your weaknesses or expose your weaknesses. And there's times in marriage to talk about things. You know, Holly helps me with my temper, but not in the middle of my temper tantrum. As she said, it's about timing. Yeah. She helps me. And one of the greatest ways that she helps me is not by going straight to the C's and D's and F's on my report card, but talking about the A's. We call this, and I got this from a book about changing things when change is hard. And the book is called Switch, and they talk about bright spots. Mm-hmm. And they talk about an epidemic. There was a starvation epidemic. Somebody went in to try to fix it. They couldn't fix it. Somebody else came in to try to fix it. They couldn't fix it. Somebody else came in and tried to fix it. They couldn't fix it. One person came in and tried to fix it, and they began to fix it. Because everybody came in the first several times trying to fix what was wrong. They would find out the problems. Why were these people starving? Trying to fix it. Couldn't fix it systemically. But then one person had the foresight to find one family that was in the same situation with limited resources that was not starving, and find out what they were doing right, and then teach that to the surrounding village.
Right.
Bright spots. If you look for the bright spots, like somebody said to me the other day, who tells you when your sermon isn't good? And I'm like, God, Holy Spirit. I feel that way. You know, I did a survey of preachers. I'm getting way off track and we got to close, but I did a survey of preachers and I was telling you this, of some of the top preachers that you would know their name. And I've been asking them, how many times do you feel like you preached great when you walk off the stage? And the most common answer was 1 out of 5 at best. Oh, that's crazy. These are the best guys in their whole field. Mm-hmm. And we said 1 out of 5 at best. And so somebody was asking me one day, they said, who tells you when your sermon isn't great? I'm like, well, usually I don't think it is anyway, so nobody has to really tell me. I'm beating up on myself way more than anybody else could. And they said, well, I bet your wife does. I bet you she tells you. And I said, no. She's my CEO. That stands for Chief Encouragement Officer. And you can do what you want to do. You don't have to listen to us. But there's something about when I walk off that stage with her and she tells me, you know, that was a word.
Yeah.
That was powerful. And, you know, she doesn't just say it. I think that would be one thing. But she shows it, shows encouragement.
Yeah.
Like, encourage means put courage in. And she puts courage in me by her presence. Did you know that every weekend she sits through all 3 of my sermons? It's the same sermon every time. Of course, I change it a lot.
It's good every time.
But she, and you're like, oh, he's so sweet. Oh, yeah, right. She talks to me that way all the time. And you know what's weird? You can trick a man into believing he's brilliant. He doesn't have any strengths. Make something up and he'll get good at it with enough repeat. You can, I mean, I'm just, it's like Inception. Women, you have power.
Yeah.
To just plant stuff. We'll think we're good at stuff. You're such a great dad. Why? You came home. Well, it's not there.
So true.
Yeah, encourage. And so what gives me a lot of boldness a lot of times is, you know, we run around in life looking for likes from a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Social media analogy. But if you get the right like from the person that you love the most, you don't need all the other stuff. And you have the power, and I have the power to tell her, I love the way you look.
Yeah.
I love the way you look. I love the way, no, I love the way you cook. I love the way she does more than just cook and look good. I have the power. You're doing a great job creating the culture at our church for staff spouses, which is what she focuses on. And I am called to encourage your strength. What if you changed your job description as a spouse today and wrote at the head, at top of the thing, the job description that you're going to make, and said CEO, Chief Encouragement Officer?
Yeah.
You think God would bless your marriage more? You think some stuff would come alive? What if that was the main thing?
Yeah.
What if you started with what you could?
And it means so much when it comes from your spouse, because I know everything there is to know about you.
True.
But yet I'm telling you, that was a great message, or you're doing a great job, or, you know, I want him to go to work and feel like I believe in him. I want my husband to know that I believe in him, but I have to tell him, and I also have to show him with my actions and with my attitude.
How about imaginary scenarios? You ever deal with any of those? It's unnecessary complication. You're allowing your energy to be eaten away by something that may not ever happen to you. And even if it does happen, why live through it twice? Once in your mind and once in your real life. I don't need a preview. It sucks enough as it is. And I know we got to think about things and think into the future, but we can't live in the future. You can't affect the future in the future. You can only affect it from now. So all this time we spend playing out stuff, there's all these conversations you have with yourself in your head. You know, I wonder who's texting him at this hour. She sounds hideous. Have you seen that commercial? She sounds hideous.
What if? You know, I remember the Old Testament prophet Elijah. He went running one time. He went running from a woman called Jezebel. And Jezebel said she was going to kill him. And so he was scared he was going to die. So he ran. But years later, Jezebel died. But Elijah never died. When the Lord wanted to take him, he took him up to heaven in a whirlwind. He was one of the only people in history that didn't actually die. God just took him. And so he went to heaven, but without dying. And God spoke to me one time about that thing. He said, you know what? Sometimes you're running from something that you're never even going to have to face. You're going to create complications by messing with it. Some of us, we create complications in our relationship by actually thinking that our wives want their problems solved. They don't. They want their problems heard. So just do it like this. Just like one word answers. And she's walking you through the thing, you know, with her mom or with whoever. Just go, what? Crazy. Stop. No. And she'll think you're the best. Try it for a week. That's your MMA Monday morning application. Limit yourself to those four words. What? No. Stop. Crazy. And good things will happen. Hey, thank you for watching. Make sure you subscribe to this channel so you don't miss a single video or live stream. And share this video with a friend. And don't forget, you can join me live every Sunday. Thanks again for watching.